I speak in the name of the living God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Amen. Would you please be seated? Folks, I think I'm getting old. What are you nodding for? But it's true, I am getting old. I tell you what, one thing I'm noticing now, you might, when you're watching television, and there's like a sort of a drama, a police drama, and you're sitting there thinking, I haven't got a clue what's going on here. Because the plots are so complex and intimate, they're moving backwards and forwards, and I'm really struggling to work out exactly who's who. And the other thing, of course, you notice, because the government cuts, there are practically no light bulbs in police stations these days. The lighting is always very bleak, and there are lots of shadows, and there's always this sort of deep murmuring music. You can't quite tell out who's the good guy and who's the bad guy. I mean, I remember Dixon Doctrine. I go back that far when I was a kid. But it's true, actually. How can you tell who's the good guy and who's the bad guy? And if you read ancient literature, it's usually very obvious. It was probably Bleak House by Charles Dickens, who was the first sort of thriller book in which you have a clear villain, and then it turns out that he's the good guy. But normally, you see, that's not how it works. And it's, you know, it's very difficult. I mean, sometimes you get those bands with the opera. There's a man wearing a mask in that, and, you know, to begin with, it's sort of, it's all very scary. Then it turns out he's all cute and cuddly. I could sing you a couple of songs, but I don't know. My group isn't prepared for that this morning. But it does raise the issue. Who is the good guy? Who's the bad guy? It gets very difficult in this complex modern drama to work out, actually, who's wearing a mask and who is doing the real thing. Who's wearing a mask and who's doing the real thing? Because, you know, we tend to know that sometimes people we think are good and we scratch them and find that they're not so good. And the bad guy sometimes you scratch, you might find something not, you know, might be a bit better than we think. And that's just one of the complications of life. How do you tell? And actually, how do you tell in church? When I was a vicar in Blackburn, on a very rough estate, nobody ever wore a mask. It was a church, I mean, I was only, I think, my third Sunday there, and I was back at the station of sermon, a woman began crying in the corner. Yes, my sermons were so bad, she was crying. But what was really nice was that someone came alongside of her and sat with her and began to talk and pray with her. And I discovered in that church, actually, it was so sort of rough and ready. Nobody wore a mask, so people could talk about depression, they could talk about divorce, they could talk about sexual problems, they could talk about brokenness and pain, and it was all right. I mean, we had about a third of the congregation on antidepressants. I used to say sometimes on Sunday we gave out red wine and Prozac. It's almost true, actually. The great thing about that church was nobody played games. What you saw was what you got. People were open. It was raw. Dangerous sometimes. It could always be too open if it was really hard work. But there was something about that, and you know, there are churches where, you know, you do feel, when you walk through the door, that you're not getting a hymn book and a face mask. And at the end of it, they just say to me, my sermon vicar, and off they go. And maybe that person never actually was seen, or wanted to be seen, or was willing to be seen, because of fear, maybe, that if we saw the real person, it wouldn't be good enough to come into the church. It wouldn't be acceptable. Maybe everyone else in the church was fearful that everyone else might say about them. So people wear masks. That's a great danger. 2,000 years ago, let me take a bit further actually. How about in the left, we decided that, I don't know, do we wear masks in this church? What about if for Lent we said no more masks? So we can make a start. How about if during Lent the vicar spent 24 hours in your home with you? How about, no, even better, that's a bit scary, isn't it? Let's depersonalize it. Let's, without you knowing, put CCTV cameras in every room in your house. And without you knowing, when you came in on a Sunday morning, we had had Elliot's highlights up in the screen. Wouldn't that be fun? maybe not. The truth is, maybe not many of us are double phrased, I hope not. But let's be honest, we all are broken. We all have fractured lives in our lives. There are all aspects about us which we're not very humble about. And to be honest, we're not too happy about anyone else seeing, because if you really saw what we were like, maybe you might not like us, want us, love us, accept us. 2,000 years ago, Jesus and his disciples walked the streets and the byways of Galilee. He called his disciples and he worked with them. There were the 12 disciples, there were a larger entourage of about 120. But the key were the disciples. For 3 years, they got to know each other. And boy, was it hard work. Because they bickered with each other. They were vying for positions, their personality disagreements, their views on politics were often diametrically opposed. They must have had some real headbanger of arguments going on with each other. What was fascinating was that they'd gone together, they'd been called by Jesus to follow him as he began to proclaim the kingdom. And there was that whisper amongst them, is this Jesus the real thing? Is this Jesus who we begin to think he is? Because they were whispering amongst each other, could he truly be the Messiah? Could he be the one who could have really bring God's kingdom? Oh, there'd been other messiahs, like figures, and dead legs, and brokenness, and disaster. There were lots of preachers around. But the truth was, most of them, one way or the other, turned out to be failures. And most of all, as they walked the streets of Galilee with this Jesus, they were close enough, intimate enough, to begin to tell whether or not he was the real thing, or whether he was wearing a mask. Then the story comes to our story today, the day of the Transfiguration. Jesus takes his three lieutenants, if you like, and he takes them up to a mountain to pray. And whilst they're up there, it wasn't so much that his mask slipped, but that something happened to him, so they saw Jesus as he truly was. Now, one of the problems with the Bible is most of us know how the story ends. Try to imagine it. Imagine the story that at the end of the Transfiguration, Jesus and the disciples come down the mountain, and the disciples say, well, that's it. We've had enough now. We're going to go home. Because to be honest, we spent this time with Jesus, and actually the mask has now slipped, and we've seen that he is, well, not really who he thought he was. He turns out to be a weak man who's just parading all this religious stuff. Or worse, he's some sort of con man. And they've gone home and said, that was it. Notice, though, they didn't do that. They went up on the mountain and they had part of this amazing experience. How can we say what happened? Nobody can define it. But whilst they were there, something about Jesus was transformed. He was transfigured. And the glory of God comes upon him. And Peter and the rest are simply dumbstruck. They don't really know what to say. And Peter typically blurts out, well, shall we put up some shelters, some sort of tents for you and Moses and Elijah? Moses and Elijah are with Jesus at this part of the story. Why are they there? Well, there were arguments. One view is that Moses represents the prophets of old, and Moses represents the law of old, and Elijah represents the prophets. Another view is that Moses and Elijah both had to irregular deaths. You know your Old Testament, so we'll go into that now. Maybe that's because of it, I don't know. But the disciples were simply transformed by watching what was in front of them. And then, as we heard read from 2 Peter, as you remembered it later, there's this moment when the Transfiguration is happening, and the Father says, this is my Son. Listen to him. This is my Son. Listen to him. That was for those disciples a transforming moment. When they came down the mountains, they weren't coming back home. They were even more convinced that this Jesus was who he said. Because if you like, I don't think it was a mask, but if they had seen it, what they saw wasn't falsehood, wasn't pretense. It was reality. They discovered that this Jesus really was the Son of the Father. This is my Son. They saw the reality. They knew it was true. And they were even more convinced that they'd been right to follow this Jesus. They were utterly ready now to go the rest of that journey. Because they had seen that this Jesus was the real thing. And that this Jesus reflected his Father's glory. They had seen him be like his true colours. You know, so often, you know, if I had CCTV of you and your home, or me and my home, you would see our true colours, wouldn't you? You would get to know our weaknesses, my weaknesses. We'd all get to see all the things you do in your life, some of which you wouldn't want to be up on the screen there. But when they saw Jesus, not only every day, but transformed on the mountain, they saw his true colours. And he wasn't a con man. He wasn't a masquerade. There wasn't some form of illusion. It was the real thing, and they knew it, and because of it, they were transformed. Notice, by the way, of course, that God has already got CCTV in our lives. It doesn't need technology. And the danger is sometimes when we are aware of God's omnipresence, we might feel that God sees us as we truly are, perhaps he will reject us, and we don't fancy our lives being on display. But please remember, the Father who speaks to Jesus, this is my Son, we're going to come back to it. So we saw his true colours, that's the first thing. But the second thing is this. What they saw on that mountaintop was a glimpse of glory. They saw Jesus radiating the glory of the Father. Again, we can't fully understand, you know, it's exactly what happened. But we saw there who he truly was. And in that moment, there was an awareness of who he was and what he was destined for. And that was really important, actually, for those disciples to know that his glory was part of what's going to happen later on. Oh, the crucifixion, they struggled with that. But when it came to the resurrection, when it came to the ascension, I'm sure they understood it there, that he was destined for glory. But note this, the voice which said, this is my Son, that voice was shared with the disciples because actually they too were destined for glory. There's a wonderful moment in the end of John's Gospel when Jesus at the resurrection, he says, go and tell them because now they need to know about my Father and who is your Father. That we are now brothers and sisters. Whatever belongs to the Father is given to me is now given to you. What's one of the wonderful things about the Transfiguration? This is my Son. Becomes not only true of Jesus, but becomes true of all Christians. And we become the children of God. We're not perfect now. We are a work in progress. I can promise you that I'm looking at you. And you're looking at me and you're thinking exactly the same thing, I know. We're a work in progress, but that's our destiny. That's what we were created for. It's what the whole of humanity was created for. And it's what we are destined for. That's the path we'll be going towards. Lent is not about just, you know, slapping it back and saying how awful I am and I must now give up chocolate. What about that? Lent is knowing that you're destined for glory. It's a wake-up call for you to begin to realize that and to appropriate it for yourself. Not that we're perfect, of course not. But we are invited on that journey towards glory, and that's our destination. So Lent isn't some awful sort of dour thing we have to go through. Lent is an invitation to God's glorious future. And it's about the point at which we say to ourselves, not how awful I am, but how great Christ is, how much the Father's love for me is, and to find that love and to know it for ourselves so that we can begin to walk tall as children of God and to know what the Father said to Jesus applies to us. This is my Son. This "This is my daughter." Have you ever heard that said about you? Because it's true. When the father looks at you, offshore, as he looks at me, he's disappointed by all the foul ups, all the mistakes, all the messes we create. But he looks at us and it puts a big smile on his face. Because he made you. Because he chose you. Because he wants you to share glory with him. This is my son. This is my daughter. This led to having led you to all that. And I invite you to it. But even more than that, far more than that, I want everyone in this church this morning to know what your destiny is. The Jesus who doesn't wear a mask is the real thing. It's so much more than each one of us. So often we want to hide who we are from each other, maybe even from God. But the God who knows us as we truly are invites us into that relationship. It invites us into that pathway to discover that we are destined for glory. This Lent, don't give up shopping. Discover you are destined for glory. When we have a communion this morning, there will be a ministry team available. If you're going to be in here, if you want to be prayed for, if you want to have that for yourself, to encourage you, because so often Lent can be such a disappointing experience for some people. If you want to have a ministry, someone to pray for you, but the team will be available. Can I just simply leave that with you? This Lent, see where you're